kitchen every night. While you're away, don't forget to write.
Bye-bye, so long, farewell.
Mark Lynch and this is Inquiry. My guest tonight is David Liebert, road manager for a number of great rock acts, artist manager, musician, songwriter, producer, and agent. And we're talking about his new memoir, Rock and Roll Warrior, My Misadventures with Alice Cooper, Prince, George Clinton, Living Color, The Runaways, and more. David, welcome to the show. It is such a pleasure to talk to you about this book. I loved it.
Ah, that's great. I'm so glad to hear that.
I never wanted it to end. Now, what I love about this is this whole strange and complicated trip that you did started with piano lessons as a kid?
Yeah, that was the genesis of it, I guess. And I remarked in the book, without those piano lessons, I may have ended up being the assistant manager of small appliances at Walmart or something like that. So, yeah.
There's so many stories in here. We can't possibly touch on them all, but there's things that I do want to talk about. You were in several bands as you were growing up, as many people in that time period were. But your first big band was a band that called The Happenings. Talk to me about how did The Happenings form?
We used to. I met a bunch of guys that liked to harmonize. You know, there was a genre of music, doo-wop music, and it was very easy to hang out and, you know, sing background and do other people's songs. And we started to realize, a few of us, that we were pretty good at this thing, and as good as some of the groups that we were hearing on the radio. Maybe we should take a more serious look at all of that. Originally, it was just, yeah, it is a good way to meet girls.
And it is.
Yeah, it really is. And then we started to think that maybe we could, this could turn into something that could be fun and profitable and maybe an occupation.
What did you do in the band?
I did a couple of things. I did the vocal arranging. And sang baritone and bass as part of the harmonizing. But it was The Happenings that made me realize that maybe the one talent I arguably did have was being able to do harmonizing, arranging voices.
Yep. Right.
There were a couple of things that I used to listen to a lot of jazz, and one of the things I noticed was there was Lambert, Hendrickson, Ross, and the Double Six of Paris, and the High Lows, and the Four Freshmen, and that sort of morphed into me listening to the Beach Boys and the Four Seasons, who are also from New Jersey. That was my influence as far as my vocal arranging style, but that was primarily my job in The Happenings to do the vocal arranging.
What I love about this part of the book is this could be, I wish this was turned into a whole other book about that era. We're talking about the mid-60s, because you have so many great stories in this. You hook up with Bright Tunes Productions, which are really sort of the band, the Tokens, the vocal group?
Yeah.
Man, for people who don't remember or don't know the Tokens, can you talk about who they are?
The Tokens were a pop group, and they had several hits. The Lion Sleeps Tonight was an enormous hit.
Huge hit.
And Tonight I Fell in Love was another one they had. They had about three or four hits, and they started producing other bands. They were the producers for the Chiffons.
Wow.
You know, He's So Fine.
Yep, yep.
And when we started to take a more serious look at all of this, I started to hit the streets of Tin Pan Alley, a section in New York City and Manhattan, where there were buildings that housed a lot of the record companies, publishing companies, production companies. If I walked into a publishing company, I told them I was a songwriter. If I walked into a record company or a production office, I was in a vocal group. I was in a band. And then one day I walked into the offices of Bright Tunes, which is a company owned by the Tokens. And they, for some reason, we had a rough demo and I played it for them, and maybe they related to it. And they offered me and Bobby Miranda, the lead singer, a job for the enormous sum of $25 a week for each of us. Those cheap so-and-sos.
Oh, wow.
And, but they also gave us a room in their office with a piano in it.
And, oh, wow.
Which gave us access to all of their friends. They had grown up in Brighton Beach, Brooklyn, which is where they got the Bright Tunes, I guess. And they were very friendly, or went to high school with a whole host of people like Carole King, Jerry Goffin, Jeez. Neil Diamond, Al Cooper, Cynthia Mann, Carole King. Jeez. There was just a whole bunch of them, and we sort of got into that loop because of the Tokens, and started to become known as songwriters. And the Tokens did use one of our songs, Down, 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 on the yep. Chiffons album.
Yep.
And one of Bobby Miranda's songs, one of the few he wrote by himself without me, was recorded by Jerry and the Pacemakers,
wow.
whose producer was George Martin. George Martin, the Beatles producer. We started to feel pretty good about everything. And one of the deals that we made with the Tokens, if we were going to work with them as writers, of course they got all the publishing for every song we wrote, was that they would produce the Happenings.
And now your first hit, 1966, was Girls on the Go?
Well, that was our first record. I wouldn't call it so much a hit. Although it was in Worcester, Massachusetts, wasn't it?
Yep.
It was a bit of a hit. That was our first taste of, I remember sitting backstage when we were about to go on and do a song. And I said, so this is fame. Not bad. I like this.
How would you describe the sound of the Happenings?
It was a four-part harmony vocal group, and like I say, our influences came from a lot of different places. The Beach Boys, of course, the Four Seasons.
I can definitely hear the Four Seasons when I listen to something like See You in September.
Right, and the Mamas and Papas were an yep. influence on us as well. If you listen carefully to I Got Rhythm, one of our other hits. Really, when I vocal arranged that, I had the Mamas and Papas. It was a ripoff. They used two-part harmonies, you know, the girls.
Yep.
And so that thing was structured very much as if I imagined the Mamas and Papas would do that song. So there's a secret out of the bag. That's not in the book.
Wow.
I had listened to a lot of, besides those jazz groups that I mentioned, I also used to listen to a radio station in Newark, New Jersey at night, and a show was hosted by a guy named Jocko Henderson. And he had Beck on the scene with the record machine and saying, oop-a-doo, how do you do? And he played groups like the Paragons, the Jesters,
oh, yeah.
Frankie yep. Lyman and the Teenagers, the Diamonds,
wow.
that sort of doo-wop yep. type of group. So that had a bit of influence on us as well.
Now, you met Frankie Valli of the Four Seasons.
Yes.
Once, and he gave you advice.
He said, don't do drugs.
And you listened to that really well, didn't you?
Not really, no. No, we didn't. He was a nice guy. It was really quite an honor that someone of Frankie Valli's stature would come down to the recording studio because he was curious about us. He wanted to meet us. We were from New Jersey, like he and the rest of the Four Seasons were, and he was very supportive. But that's the one thing I remember him saying repeatedly, don't do drugs, don't do drugs. Somehow or other, we didn't get the message.
Did you go on the Dick Clark tour?
Yes.
And Dick Clark. And that's a huge deal back then. That's a big deal.
That was a big deal. The Dick Clark Cavalcade of Stars, and who was on that? The
Lou Christie.
Lou Christie, yeah. He was... he gave me a bit of advice. When we went on that tour, we had the number one record in the country. Of course, the Cavalcade of Stars was only paying us $300 a night, but we wanted to do it anyway because the exposure was, you know, playing to 10, 15, 20,000 people a night. And I mentioned in the book, Lou Christie came down and sat at the counter in the restaurant of the hotel where we were staying, and he says, you guys look a little bit confused. Am I right? And he was right. All of a sudden, we went from being nothings to being perceived as being something special. He says, listen, people want to think you're something special. Let them think it. You know, it was confusing. He says, let me put it in perspective for you. Let them think you're something special. You're still the same nothing you ever will. It's just that they think you're something special. Let them. It's good for business. Just don't start believing it yourself, and you'll be grounded, and you'll be able to get through all of this. Just don't take yourself seriously. It's a great piece of advice.
It was a really great. That's a great piece of advice. And people don't remember who Lou Christie was. He had a huge hit, "Lightning Strikes Again." Which,
yes.
Amazing vocals on that.
Yeah, that was just a great record. And he was a great performer. The girls just go absolutely nuts when he came out on stage. And he was a really good guy.
Now, what happened to the Happenings? You had a disastrous gig one night, which was just a huge flop. And it became obvious to you that where the band wanted to go was not where you wanted to go.
That's true. We recorded an album. What I wanted to do was apply our harmony techniques, which is something that we did very well, to a more contemporary themes and structures. You know, we had morphed from a stand-up vocal group into a band. I played bass and/or keyboards. Bobby Miranda, our lead singer, turned out in a very short order becoming a very good guitar player. He even played piano a little bit. And we brought in a drummer. We brought in another guitar player. So we became a band, which I felt was essential because everything was changing. That's when all of a sudden FM radio started to become the conduit for bands that wrote their own songs and just an alternative to the top 40 format that was on AM radio. No one listened to AM that I know, unless you were a classical music buff. But all of a sudden, boom, it became the driving force in music. And it was the where bands were not so AM friendly. That's where the music went. I knew that's where music was going. I wanted to be part of that. We recorded an album called Peace of Mind. We played our own instruments, and we wrote all the songs, and it was a really good album. I think it was the best thing we ever did. And I wanted to, and we stopped having, you know, top 40 hits, so which is one of the reasons we made that album. And what I wanted to do was integrate that into our show, our performance. And so I talked our agent into getting us a gig at the Whiskey A Go-Go in Hollywood, California, where I felt we could expose our new look to a whole new audience. And the rest of the Happenings would have none of it. They felt the future was continue to doing what we were doing, which was basically playing colleges and nightclubs. Huh. They felt they could do that for the next 20 years without hits.
Oh, man.
And I didn't feel that way. I felt we had to change or we weren't going to survive. And so I got that booking at the Whiskey, and I wanted to, you know, rehearse with all the new songs we did on the Peace of Mind album. And they just refused to do it. They liked what they were doing. They really didn't want to change. And so we played in front of this extremely hip, very progressive audience, and they hated us. It was the only time that happened. He's ever really bombed. And
that's it's a horrible feeling.
Oh, I'll tell you, I felt like a beaten dog, and I walked back to our hotel a few blocks away. And by the time I got to the hotel, I decided I was going to leave. I was going to leave the happenings.
You're listening to WISN 90.5 FM. This is Inquiry. My name is Mark Lynch. My guest tonight is David Liebert, road manager for a number of great rock acts, artist manager, musician, songwriter, producer, and agent. And we're talking about his new memoir. It is a must-read. Rock and Roll Warrior, My Misadventures with Alice Cooper, Prince, George Clinton, Living Color, The Runaways, and more. David.
Yes, sir.
You become the tour manager for the Alice Cooper show, and that's like a really complicated job. I mean, how did you know what you're getting yourself into?
No, absolutely no idea. I kind of knew who Alice Cooper was, and Alice's booking agent was a very good friend of mine, Johnny Padell, and he called me one day and said, you know, Alice Cooper is looking for a tour manager. Why don't you check it out? I'll introduce you to Chef Gordon. And it was at that point I had left the happenings. I was doing the road managing for Rare Earth. You remember Rare Earth?
Oh, yeah, I do. Of course.
And that was a nice, cushy job. I would advance the dates for my apartment in New York, and then I'd fly out the night before to Detroit to meet the band and, you know, road manage their dates. And then after the end of the little run, I'd put them back on a plane to Detroit and I'd fly back to New York. Really nice, cushy job. I loved it.
And from there, he goes through the gates of hell.
Yeah, it was. You know, that first gig was at the Fox Theater in Atlanta with Alice Cooper, and Chef Gordon says to me, look, just observe as much as you can, you know, you'll get the hang of it, because I knew absolutely nothing about what I was supposed to do. To me, the whole thing, my first impression was a bunch of 30 or 40 crazy, wild-looking guys crawling all over this gear and equipment like giant insects, and I said to myself, oh, what have I got myself into? I thought I made the biggest mistake of my life.
And it ended up being one of the greatest experiences you ever had.
Oh, absolutely. And by the end of the week, I started to figure things out, and it just became, you know, a dream gig, a tough gig.
Oh, yeah.
But it was just a great adventure.
I want to ask you a bunch of things about touring with Alice, and that's all we're going to have time for. And I want to tell the audience there's so much more that's going to be in the book. How would you describe Alice Cooper's personality?
He was a great guy. I mean, early on in the gig, I realized that here is a guy that didn't take himself seriously. He did.
He took
what he did seriously, but he was just a down-to-earth guy. He wasn't this crazy guy that killed chickens and puppies and kittens. And, you know, it was all just an act. He'd rather play golf with Perry Como, you know. But everybody seemed to have so much respect and admiration for him that all of the people that worked for him bent over backwards, the rest of the band too, to make sure that everything went perfectly. Because the band and Alice, they relied on a lot of props and effects and things of that nature. And, you know, he was getting hung in a gallows or was having his head chopped off in later tours. We needed to make sure that everything worked right, that there were no accidents. Hey, listen, if we accidentally cut off his head, we'd all be out of jobs. You know, we had to be careful.
Now,
he was just a great guy to hang out with. He was humble. He could feel just as comfortable hanging out with one of the roadies as he would hanging out with Mick Jagger. That was just his personality. There's nothing bad that I can say about Alice. And he had a great sense of humor. I had to put him on a plane, a private jet. It was going to fly him, I think, from Dallas to Chicago. And he was going to be out of my my purview. You know, he was my responsibility. I was very nervous. And in typical Alice Cooper sarcastic fashion, he says, "Relax, Liebert. I can wipe my own ass. You just make sure there's toilet paper there."
Now, who was Eva Marie Snake?
Eva Marie Snake was the python that Alice performed with every night on stage. It was a big 10-foot long python, and he called her Eva Marie Snake. You remember Eva Marie Snake?
Oh, yeah.
So that's how he came up with the name. But no one really knew if the snake was a boy or a girl. We had to be very careful with the snake because the snake, being a tropical creature, couldn't really be exposed to cold. Otherwise, it would catch pneumonia and slowly, inevitably end up dying. And we first noticed that when the snake stopped eating. I remember we tried everything. We went to pet shops. We tried mice, rats, gerbils, little bunnies, nothing. Eva Marie Snake would not eat any of it. And now here we are traveling with all these little creatures and all their little cages. I had to assign somebody to, you know, get the necessary foods for these individual animals. And the absurdity of it all really didn't hit me until after a few weeks of traveling with this menagerie of little animals in little cages. So I said, "Hey, listen," I think we were in Knoxville. I said, "Listen, just dump the little cages on the conveyor belt and let's get out of here." And then we were out of the animal feeding business. And unfortunately, Eva Marie Snake did end up dying. And after
the last show, she died after the last show. She was a real trooper.
She was a real trooper. Never missed the show. After an extremely brief period of mourning, she was replaced by Kachina, who went on to do the subsequent performances.
At one point, Flo and Eddie were touring with you, or at least were on the plane, or in the bus, rather.
That was Alice's favorite support act. I mean, those guys were...
I love Flo and Eddie.
They were hilarious, and they...
For people who don't know, they were... first of all, they were originally the Turtles, but then they were with Frank Zappa and the Mothers of Invention, which is when I first saw them live.
Right, and then they went off on their own Flo and Eddie.
They were hilarious.
They were true. I mean, we just loved having them on tour with us, and... I made sure, and they made my job a lot easier because I wasn't the only one that had to keep the entourage amused. Now I had professional comedic backup. It made my job a little bit easier. And 40 years later, after those tours in the early to mid 70s, and they were the support act on several of those tours. We just loved having him around. Those guys ended up suing Pandora and Sirius XM because those companies and others stopped paying artist royalties on recordings that were recorded prior to 1972. And they won the case, and we all benefited from that, and it was quite a windfall, actually, and still is to this day. The influence was so great that Congress passed the Music Modernization Act because of it.
We could talk about you touring with Alice for hours, and I want to tell the audience there are so many stories, including lots about groupies and drugs, in the book. But I want to end because I want to pay attention to this because this really was interesting for me. You're really into animal rights now.
Yes, as I'm having this interview with you, I'm surrounded by canine. I have five dogs around me. I can't begin to tell you the joy these dogs bring into my life. It's really immeasurable. And I'm sort of retired or semi-retired. And yeah. To have these dogs around is really a pleasure. And I've become an advocate for, you know, they can't speak for themselves, so I speak for them. And say what you will about Facebook and Instagram and their ilk. Those social media platforms have reduced the euthanasia
yes.
rate of animals
That's right.
by 95% because it made people aware of, the plight of abandoned and abused dogs. And so that's a good thing.
Dolly was the only dog to have ever been awarded a gold record.
Yes, that was my beagle back in the back in the 70s, and I also animated her. I gave her voice. You know, she said, "You got any food? Leave us to feed me. I wouldn't kid you about a thing like that."
We're completely out of time. Like, and I said, we've only scratched the surface of this amazing book. My guest tonight has been David Liebert, road manager for a number of the great rock acts, artist manager, musician, songwriter, producer, agent, and he's got a great new memoir out called Rock and Roll Warrior, My Misadventures with Alice Cooper, Prince, George Clinton, Living Color, The Runaways, and more. David, it's been a real pleasure.
Thank you very much. It's been a real pleasure, Mark, talking to you.
You're listening to WICN 90.5 FM. This is Inquiry. My name is Mark Lynch.
Feel alone each and every night. While you're away, don't forget to write.